Of course, we're talking about the one and the only, the man, the myth, the legend, one of the greatest professional wrestlers of all time. You can follow him on Twitter at r_Roddy_Piper, the Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing good. I'm a box of fluffy ducks. I was listening to some of your shows, and you were talking about people being suspended, and I thought maybe it was the build-up for having me on. You have news I don't know again or something. No, what have I done this time? You know, Gabe, the original Gabe,
yes,
was in Kansas City. I was like maybe 15 years old. And there's Ronnie Etchison, the Viking, the Oats, Bulldog Bob Brown, and there was this old-timer, and he wore a watch. He couldn't tell time, though. And everybody called him Gabe, because he wouldn't tell anybody his real name. And go, hey, Gabe, what time is it? And he'd look at his watch and go, didn't know it was so late.
Oh, my goodness. Roddy, I can tell this interview is going to be very entertaining from start to finish already. But before we look back on your career, Roddy, I know you have a very busy couple weeks ahead. I guess you have your own road to WrestleMania, so to speak. You have a lot of appearances coming up. So why don't you tell the listeners what's coming up for you and how people can, you know, be involved and be a part?
Oh, very cool. Holy cow, man. I'm doing so much stuff, so much wonderful stuff. Are you guys a fan of the Fantasy Factory, Rob Dyrdek?
Absolutely.
So tomorrow I'm with Rob. I did a show about a week ago, and we're going to finish it up. And he built a skateboard ramp from his office, and he skateboarded and jumped right up over the ring and landed in the ring. It was very cool. But cool. I ripped my left bicep just a little bit.
Oops.
When I caught him. And I'm going to do his show again tomorrow, and I think that he's going to come to Atlanta with me.
For WrestleMania.
You know, from here I go from that. I do the Fantasy Factory Tuesday. Thursday I do the Kimmel Show. Then Friday I got to go. Harley Race has asked me to come. Well, am I going to say no? So
yeah,
I'll get
exactly.
on an airplane and go pay homage to Harley for a couple days there, and then go back to Portland, pick up my son Colt, and we're going to head to Atlanta, and there's a very cool venue there called the Punchline, and I did it last year, and I'm going to do a show there this year. They actually flew a piano in for me. I can't even play the thing. I won't work on it for you. And from there, so the Punchline I'm going to do Thursday in Atlanta, the Thursday of WrestleMania week. And then I'm not sure what I'm going to do with Rob, so, you know, I don't want to spoil nothing. Rob Dyrdek. Going to do that, and then I don't know. You know, we'll talk about it, whether we do a piece of business with Ric Flair or not.
And I want to ask you about that, because on your Twitter account, and people can follow you at r_Roddy_Piper, you're talking about losing Ric Flair. I need to find Ric Flair. Like, I would assume at this point it would be very easy for you, a man who has such a storied history with him, to find him. So why are you on the hunt for Ric Flair, Rod?
Well, I tell you, I says, Rickus, you know, I've heard different things, and I want to know how you're doing, Rickus. And he takes me back, Hot Rod, it's Nate. I'm doing great. I'll call you tomorrow. Tomorrow comes, no call. Hey, Nate, how you doing? It's Hot Rod. Hey, Hot Rod, I'm doing great. I'll call you tomorrow. Tomorrow never came. I've lost him. I don't know where the heck he is. He's like Bigfoot now. There's just sightings of him around. You know, and it's I love Ric Flair. I love him. He's my brother. I don't agree with everything he does, but I love him. And been reaching out to him, you know, to support him and maybe do a piece of work. I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, I'm a little angry.
Why is that?
Well, there's been a lot of miscommunication about Roddy Piper and maybe Flair. Ever since actually the book I brought the In the Pit with Piper out in 2003. And I just let it go for a long time. I'm diving off into this subject, so I'll finish up. I'll do WrestleMania, Fan Excess. I get to see, like, they were fans of mine before they were fans of WWE anything. So we go back so far, so many generations. people like cry. It's one of the most beautiful things. You know, I love giving them my heart, and they give me their hearts. So after the Punchline in Atlanta, I'll go do Fan Access Friday, Saturday. We'll see if I'm in WrestleMania. We'll see about the rest of that week. And then I come back and other stuff that I have to do in Hollywood. So that's where Rod's going to be. I want you to come to the Punchline. I think that would be a blast. I'm going to be in Denver April 14th to 16th also. Just people are asking. B.B. King's place in Times Square.
There's a lot coming up for you, and of course people can get more information on your Twitter account, r_Roddy_Piper. You post all of your schedules, and the website is there for people to buy tickets, etc. But I want to ask about what we just kind of left off at, you saying I'm kind of pissed off, but let me go back to talk about my schedule. As much as we want to see you in person, we also want to know what makes you upset, Rod. Let's talk about this. I mean, why is one of the biggest legends in professional wrestling upset?
Okay, I'll tell you. You know, because like, you people have been wonderful, and you allow me to come on your show, and I'm very lucky to be able to do that.
Well, thank you.
I've come to that point in my life, but I'll tell you why. In 2003, I wrote a book, and while I was writing the book, I was in a car accident that almost killed me, and I couldn't finish the book, but they threw me on the road, and after that particular car accident I went into, I had a really bad problem inside my organs from it that lasted for about 8 years. And during that 8 years, you know, we had cancer, we beat cancer, we had a couple of different ailments, we beat that. And there was a lot of pot shots taken at Roddy Piper during that time. And I never once kicked back. I never once made a comeback. I never said anything. A lot of misinformation and a lot of really mean-spirited things. Because, like, you know, the old saying, you never hit a man when he's down, kick him, it's easier. And it seemed to play that. And I think that there's been some respect lost to a certain point, and maybe some deserved by me. But some, it goes over the line, and I'm not going to allow that to happen anymore. You know, the career I've had, it's not even close to finished, and I'm not talking about in the ring. I see in the WWE universe so many places that they can go that they haven't got yet. We still can make history, but here's just like one of the things. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
While I was, this had been 2009, okay? I had to go in a hospital for 6 weeks in 2009. It's the only time it was called BTW, Big Time Wrestling. I call it By the Way Wrestling. And I had to cancel a shot there, and because I was in the hospital. It's the first time in my entire career I've ever had to cancel a shot. I'm pretty up on that. So the promoter there, he, for some reason, doesn't believe it and shooting his mouth off and says it's baloney and, you know, whatever he thought that I was doing. So during that period of time, the press, you know, a wide word there, wide definition of it, catches on, and they run a story that I'm dying of terminal cancer and I have 2 weeks to live. Now, I get a lot of, you know, it's my job to take heat. I don't got a problem with that. But I'm in a hospital where nobody can get a hold of me. Because of that, and because of this promoter saying these things that are untrue, and I never stuck up, my family at home in Oregon, the florist that I dealt with for like 30 years, all of a sudden blankets the house with flowers, with condolences that your husband's dying. My kids go to school, and it's all over the internet. And they run up, and my kids are crying. My daughter, Ariel, on Facebook, people, you know, it's like, and it was completely untrue, but my family didn't know that. And this just takes, obviously, one that's a little closer to my heart.
I can feel the emotion in your voice, Rob.
Yeah, you know, I try to keep the ego out of it as much as possible. But, like, you know, if you want my you may not want my attention once you get it, and you've got it now. This one fella, and I'm not going to throw names around here, take the high road. But in the book, Also, there was criticism that I was lying in the book, and I never did, not once. I wrote a second book. I'm about a quarter of the way through it. But I'm writing this book to my family, because nobody knows anything about me before I was 15. So in the business, then I'm going to bring us up to date here, Rod, with WrestleMania, the one we're having now. Let's stop at WrestleMania 25 for a second. WrestleMania 25 comes around. Mickey Rourke has got the movie, the wrestler, out. And with like 3 weeks' notice, when I have this disease going on, these different things I've told you, I get a call, will you make WrestleMania 25? And, you know, I come from a school that nobody else has come to in our business. Nobody. Nobody was raised by Mad Dog Vachon and all the people that raised me. So I'm taught to keep my mouth shut and take the heat. And I'm the last one that still has problem talking anything to do with kayfabe. So WrestleMania 25, when they ask me, I just say yes, because that's what I'm supposed to say. But I don't look right, and the match sucked. I hated myself. But I never said anything about it. I didn't say that I was throwing up every morning. I didn't say nothing. I had back surgery taken out, and that's the way they found cancer. So they ripped open my back. I didn't say nothing. It's cool. Then I see this WrestleMania coming up, and like The Rock. I've never met The Rock. I got a lot of respect for him. I fought his grandfather,
the High Chief.
And when I was in Hawaii, I actually had a T-shirt that said, The Great Howley. And so if you know what Howley means, you'll know how much balls it took to wear that T-shirt.
What does it mean for people who don't know?
Well,
or do we have to look it up ourselves?
Okay, if you had a negative connotation for a Jewish person or a black person,
yes.
Well, that would be their negative connotation in Hawaii for us.
You have a penchant for wearing racially infused T-shirts in your career, don't you, Rod?
Well, here's the thing: is like they call me Howley, like I'm supposed to be upset about it. I laugh. I put it on the T-shirt. But then they bust off antennas from cars, and then when you come by, scope them out and hit you with them. That's the downside. But because I'm made to stand my ground, as I'm going to do on this show. I got lost for a while. I've been in this business so long, and I've seen so much that I think I might have gave up a little bit. And I'm not going to allow my career that. And I come bring you up to Peter Maivia, Rocky Johnson. Rocky Johnson had a hard time in our business. People don't give him enough credit. Rocky Johnson was married, obviously, to Peter Maivia's daughter. And racial tensions at that particular time in the entire world of our sport. It was hard for Rocky to toe that line, and he did a great job. I see that now they have the John Cena. I've got respect for everybody. I think they're all great, but I'm watching them, and they're going, well, wait a second, you know, The Rock's going, I paved the road for you, and I paid. Hang on. There's only one guy that paved the road to Hollywood. Only one guy. And they hated that guy in Hollywood. They hated us from our industry. And it caused a fallout with John Carpenter and I. But they don't seem to want to remember, or they try to discredit you. And I don't know why they do this. But it's obviously easily looked up. There has only been, I'm very proud of the way I was raised in my business, because I was raised to be on your side. Whoever you are, I'm on your side, and I won't take a back step. So in cutting new paths in my business, with Piper's Pit, having Cyndi Lauper in there, bringing Mr. T from the outside, kicking Cyndi Lauper. When I slapped Mr. T, you know, he didn't know it was coming. And I knocked Mr. T a lot, but, you know, he's tough enough to stand in there. So what I'm saying is these acts that I did, I did them with not only furthering myself, but furthering the business. And they were hard. And they took a lot of balls. It took a lot of balls to say, You ain't pinning my shoulders in WrestleMania. I ain't letting Mr. T beat me because I was protecting our business. You never let somebody come from outside the business, have their way with the business, and leave the next day and laugh at you. That's just not going to happen. I'm protecting your radio show. I'm protecting Vince's commodities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm protecting everybody. But they didn't see it like that back then.
You know, it's interesting you say that, Rob, because there could be examples. I'm thinking of WrestleMania 11 as a perfect example. Lawrence Taylor has one main event match, wins against Bam Bam Bigelow, and doesn't essentially wrestle again. And you showed an example of yourself protecting the business, saying, no, this can't happen with me against Mr. T. But, I mean, where did that get lost? I mean, why is that not happening anymore?
You know, perfect way you're looking at it. Perfect. Now here's, I think, where it got lost. How the hell does David Arquette become the world champion?
Yeah, exactly.
Are
another
you serious
example.
And that's, you go back to the NWO and WCW, where, you know what, our business is about physicality. Yes, entertainment is beautiful, but let's not forget the basics of our business. And then David Arquette's a friend of mine, an acquaintance, rather. But how the hell does he become world champion? How do you have that kind of disrespect? Especially at that time, it was the NWA championship, one that Luthez held, one that Strangler Lewis held, for heaven's sakes. So what happened was, people that had got some type of credibility in our business, but, you know, short-term flash-in-the-pan credibility, all of a sudden decides they know what's right. And it's called the Peter Principle. It's when you're in the height of your own ignorance. And that started just like, I'm trying real hard to be a good boy these days. But I'm taking a stand. I'm not sure why Drew Carey is getting in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure why Bob Uecker is in the Hall of Fame. I don't know.
Well, to be fair, though, I will play devil's advocate on that, just only because it seems like the celebrity wing is kind of a way for the WWE to partner with celebrities, just another way for them to promote whatever they have promoting and give some shine back to the company. I don't think that it would be fair to compare Drew Carey's induction to, say, Roddy Piper's induction or whoever else, whatever worker that gave their blood, sweat, and tears to the company. Is that fair to say?
Well, it's interesting because I agree with you to the point that we're rubbing shoulders. Drew Carey, good guy, rubbing shoulders. It's great for our industry. However, when do you make the David Arquette mistake?
What,
like, for instance, if maybe you had in the Hall of Fame, you had the a Lifetime Achievement Award, Bob Uecker would fit right in there. It's how you categorize it, I think. Because there's some guys that have been... that got stabbed three times to get in that Hall of Fame. So, at the same time, our business has evolved. 140 countries every week Raw goes into. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
WWE Universe, and it is entertainment.
Well, I'll give you another example. I mean, Snooki of Jersey Shore fame is going to be appearing at WrestleMania, and she's going to be involved in a match. I mean, I don't know how much she'll actually be involved, but to be honest with you, 5 years down the line, it wouldn't shock me to see Snooki be inducted in the celebrity wing of the Hall of Fame because of her involvement at WrestleMania 27, if that's the only thing she does.
So then should we not... We need to keep the focus on what drives our business. And that
yes.
Those wrestlers, entertainers of the WWE and all the other places around the world that night after night are sacrificing their bodies. You can't put those other people in that same category.
Yes.
I think it's just a matter of categorizing. It's a bit of an insult, but I understand it.
Well, let me ask you this, then, and you make a very good point. So then I'll bring the conversation back to The Rock, because you were talking about The Rock and John Cena. Now, as of right now, we know that The Rock will not be involved in a match at WrestleMania. He is simply the WrestleMania host. Now, we know he started off in professional wrestling. He made it in Hollywood, and you know, you paved the way for wrestlers to be able to do that. But my question to you is this, then. Should The Rock give back to pro wrestling in the sense that he should step into the ring again?
Good question. No, I don't think that he needs to step into the ring. I think that The Rock, and I'm on The Rock's side. I'll just speak. I think that The Rock is smart in hosting and glorifying the event and helping it draw and then get out. Once he gets in the ring, he's taking a step backwards from the wonderful career he's built. Now, I did shoot an idea to the WWE. I said, put Cena and The Rock in Piper's Pit in WrestleMania.
Interesting.
Because I had heard he wasn't going to wrestle, and I thought people would want to see him. I think they may be a little shy of that. But if, off the top of my head, you know what I'd do? I'd put up, I'd put up one of my movies, Hell Comes to Frogtown. And I'd put up one of his, Scorpion King. I said, anybody can be beautiful and muscular and act well, but can you impregnate a Holocaust frog? No, it's important things in life. And I would play them against each other like that. And at the same time, I'd get down to the nitty-gritty. Because now we're talking entertainment. And we're not talking Bob Uecker doing it. Not Jim Carrey. We're talking within the Rock has certainly earned the right to be where he's been. So we're talking, why don't they use the people that have given to the business as The Rock, as myself, and put them in the mix, because we're powerful enough to carry it off without bringing in Schnooki. We don't, you know, now I understand Schnooki, it's great trimming. God bless her, never met, don't know her, but you know, that's great. But don't put them within the meat and potatoes and the guts. You got to know where the line is, because otherwise that's when you're going to, the ratings start flatlining and you get milk toast. You got, you know, all the interchangeable heads on the bodies all monotoning the same lines. And you're losing the magic. Come on. Here's the magic, okay?
Yeah.
Zed, we all understand now, is a given. When you start at A, it's how you get to Zed that nobody knows. That's where the magic is, and we know that, or some of us know that.
And I guess I'll ask this question then. When Raw was, or maybe this is one reason why they don't have a weekly Raw guest host anymore, but oftentimes we would see the Raw guest host in the past year, Roddy, appearing in the ring in a physical capacity. I mean, John Heater of Napoleon Dynamite fame is a perfect example where he was involved in a tag team match on Raw, and that was a regular occurrence for celebrities. Was that a good idea or was that a bad idea?
I think that it, in my humble opinion, I think it's a bad idea. But I think that it comes from people trying to do the right thing. It's like every time they bring a legend back, they think, well, we'll have one of the young superstars beat him up and get some heat. Baloney. It's disgusting. It's old. It doesn't mean anything. It's the same when you put these people within the mix like that. The wrestling fans sitting back, it's not the same. It's not the guts. It's not where your honest emotion comes from when you all of a sudden stand up and cheer for something. That honest emotion has been hard got from you, whether you realize it or not. And when you put, if you put Schnooki in, yeah, okay, it's good name on the card. But remember who's going to be there tomorrow. Remember who's drawing the dollars day after day after day after day. You know, first WrestleMania, Bob Orton Jr. and I took a cab home, man.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even, I can't even picture that. You were in the main event of the very first WrestleMania, and you took a cab home?
Yeah, man. Here's the deal.
Wow.
Is, you know, we all had limousines, all that stuff. Now, here's the deal. It's not necessarily anybody's fault, but this is the way it came down. You see, back then, what they didn't understand, New York was a big man's territory, and two, a babyface territory, just by history, and that's all they knew. They didn't understand that the bad guy, is the guy that really runs things and draws the money. Also, the heel, they're the ones they're trying to kill. You don't need to put cops around Hogan. Put cops around Piper. He's the one having trouble getting from Denny's back to his hotel room every night while people put girls just want to have fun or whatever I've done lately. So in the first WrestleMania, there was a big party for T and Hogan, and the company was all excited about jumping off and doing this great stuff, and it was great stuff. But they forgot one real important thing. What about the two guys that really got the show over? And when we can't leave right away, you see, because the people in New York at that time, I just didn't want to get stabbed again. And finally, we're waiting, and we come, and there's no cars at all. And the police say, and you go down around a little roundabout in the garden, and you get to the bottom. And this is I wrote this in my book. There's a policeman on a horse at the bottom of it, no cars, and the horse is taking a poop. And every time it lands, Orton has an expletive for it. And finally, we just got angry and plowed out the door. I don't know how many people we went through, and got in the cab and left.
I always wondered about that. I mean, obviously, the debate will rage on, and we obviously, I mean, I can't ask you this question because you had obviously, you already gave the answer. Who really drew WrestleMania 1? Was it Hulk Hogan, or was it people wanting to see Roddy Piper get his ass kicked? I mean, you make a very good argument for the latter, Roddy. But I do have another question about that main event. Why was that main event not a singles match between Hulk Hogan and Rowdy Roddy Piper?
Okay, because old school booking. The real match was the war to settle the score.
Yes. Why wasn't that match at WrestleMania?
Well, because they didn't know how to get it kicked off. And they had MTV all of a sudden. And all these people from MTV jumping in, publicizing this match, and all of a sudden it was the hottest match they got. Well, where do you go from there? What they wanted is they wanted me to take a dive there. No. Because that's the history of that territory. Bruno was there. Think about it. Buddy Rogers, you got a guy come in, you get him hot, put him against a champion, he beats him, they leave. How many guys? Hundreds. That was their formula. Just keep me on track. With the WrestleMania...
Yeah, with WrestleMania being a tag team match with you and Orton versus T and Hogan.
Because they put their hot match on first instead of putting that match on first. They got it backwards.
Okay.
You see, and they also thought that Mr. T's name would be an additive, a bigger additive than going the other way, but it's ass backwards. It needed to be a tag match if it wound up into whatever Donnybrook it did, and then bring it back in the esteemed champion, a wrestling match for the world's heavyweight championship. Not the one that David Arquette had or anybody else. Then that title, you understand why that's so important. Because they went, but it was done backwards.
And that makes sense because, and I always wondered that, and you're right, because the war to settle the score came first and that match should have, because in my opinion, if it was the biggest show of all time at the time in WrestleMania, then the title should have been on the line and you should have been the challenger because with all due respect to Cowboy Bob Orton, I think he's a legend in the business. I think everybody was there to see you get your comeuppance.
Absolutely. You know, because think about it. I had kicked Cyndi Lauper, who was the female vocalist of the year. Geraldine Ferrara, who was running for vice president, was yelling, "Roddy, you're Piper, you're not fit to wear a kilt." Dr. Ruth Westheim, I mean, we go on and on. It got so much attention. Cyndi Lauper, when she won her award that's broadcast all over the world, last thing she said, "And Roddy Piper, you're going to get yours." Okay, well, hang on. That's pretty serious press there that nobody ever before in the history of our business got. They weren't saying that about Hogan. Now, I heard Hogan went on a Pittsburgh radio a couple weeks ago and said if it wasn't for Roddy Piper, there wouldn't have been a WrestleMania. I don't know if that's completely accurate, but if he did, I'd say thank you very much. But it took both of us, Hulk.
I agree with that. I think Hulk Hogan was the ultimate babyface, and you were the ultimate heel going into that, and everyone wanted to see what would happen. Regardless of, I mean, Mr. T and Bob Orton in that match anyway were really accessories, and they wanted to see both of you, meet face-to-face in the ring. I guess the war to settle the score, I guess the booking backwards. But, I mean, a spawn to that, Roddy, is your feud with Mr. T, and I always wondered, watching that feud, especially WrestleMania 2 and the build-up, I mean, legit, you guys didn't like each other, did you?
No, still to this day. The very first time I met him was later. We were in doing the first press conference in Rockefeller Center, and it's at the top. And of course, I'm late, and the door's closed, and I open the door, and all these cameras go off, and on my right hand side was Mr. T. Then there was Hogan. Then there was McMahon in a podium, and then there was Orndorff, and a chair with my name on it. And when I came in, Mr. T flexed his muscle, and he said, "Feel this." I'd never talked to the guy before. So I squeezed his head, and I said, "It's pretty soft." And I didn't know you weren't supposed to touch Mr. T. So what do you mean I'm not supposed to touch the guy? Then the arrogant attitude of, "Well, you know, I'm Mr. T. I'm the world's toughest bouncer." I know for a fact that the world's toughest bouncer competition he was in, they had to bust through a door and ring a bell at the end of it. Well, it's not called balsa wood. It's a different kind of wood, but it's a real flimsy wood that door's made out of. Anybody could bust through it. So you might be a great bouncer, the world's toughest bouncer, but you're in the league, and at that time, cream of the crop from professional wrestling. Where MMA started with guys like Luthez and Judo Gene and et cetera. We called them hookers. So you're going to walk in the ring, Mr. T? One time I'm with Mr. T at, this is the killer for me. I was in the Palm, and I had to have dinner with him. And you know there's a drink called Crown Royal, and it comes in a purple bag.
Absolutely.
It's been a while, but I remember it. Someday we'll talk about that. So Mr. T pulls out this purple Crown Royal bag, and then he proceeds to pull out an unbelievable gold and jeweled goblet, and he puts it on the palm on the table, and he looks and he says, "If it's good enough for the Pope, it's good enough for Mr. T." And then he ordered a mimosa. I just wanted to backhand him right out of his chair. Are you serious? And then he did a couple of things where he got very angry at me. You know, I guess he wasn't used to being ripped apart in interviews. And I slapped him, pow, and he didn't know it was coming. So he did an interview I was in New York, he was in Satellite. He was in L.A. And he came out in a kilt. And if you get a chance to check it out. And he comes out, and he's got a chicken, and he goes, I pity the Piper. He nothing but a chicken. And he's got the kilt on, and he's trying to make fun of me. And he's sweating, and he's pulling this chicken because he's going to rip the head off like he's going to rip the head off Roddy Piper. But this chicken was made at the Chicken Magic Store, and it was one of them stretchy chickens. And the more he pulled, the more he sweated,
oh,
harder I laughed. And finally, he put the chicken down and put his feet, like doing a deadlift, to pull the chicken up to break the head, and it slipped from under his feet and hit him in the face. Like, I'm howling. I don't have to do an interview when you're doing ones like that.
Wow.
But here's the thing. Mr. T, you're going to walk in, put a kilt on, and call me a chicken. That's your idea of coming into the most prestigious event in the history of our business at that time? That was your idea of doing the press for it? That's where he was coming from. In his, there was no respect at all. So, okay, champ, let me show you no respect. You're going to have a long night. And if you watch the very first WrestleMania, careful here, Rod. I don't know that it matters anymore. There was all kinds of talk about it in the inner circle. And I said, keep it amateur. Don't let T throw a punch. He wanted to knock heads together. All that. Keep it amateur with T. Let the tag go to Hogan. He can carry the ball. You watch that match. It's exactly that.
And what about
the way he tags Hogan is I got a front face lock on him.
Yeah.
He was going to tag when I wanted him to. So there's a lot of heat. But, you know, but I was protecting our business. So we'll go back to why am I writing another book?
Yes.
the whole thing, and I'm not angry at these people. I'm just, it's hard to make my point without giving the descriptions, you know, of what's going on. And it's like, my career is not even close to over. I'm not talking about bouncing around in the ring, but as far as entertaining, I'm in great shape right now. I'm on top of my game.
Yeah, we know that. You do comedy tours. I mean, you have a lot of irons on the fire, so to speak, in this new book. Is there a release date for this book set?
No, I'm going to be real careful with this book. I'm going to put everything. You know, my family doesn't know anything about their dad before 15 years old.
How much do you remember? I mean, I remember the first conversation on the phone I ever had with you, Rod. You were telling me about how you bounced from home to home and moving around from Saskatchewan to Winnipeg up in Canada, and how so many memories were blurry.
Yeah, I moved like 23 times by the time I was 13. I lived on an Indian reservation. I wasn't taught, I've never read a book in my life, not even my own. I can't read books. In Canada, wow. You ask anybody from my generation. The very first year, I went to my grade one school in an Indian reservation called The Paw, T-H-E-P-A-S, Manitoba. It's a gateway to the Northwest Territories. Serious, still probably the toughest Indian reservation in Canada. And I was the only white kid. And they drug me in there on my belly. And I got beat up every day. And the system that they taught, they changed the way to teach children. And for reading, they taught learning words by memorization. And there was a thing you asked somebody about, I think it was called long math, and I'd have to see you to do it. And they taught this system for 2 years, of which I had moved four times, four different schools. Then they found out it doesn't work. So they went back have you read by phonics and the correct math. Well, by that time, I was doomed. And the different schools, I was just a good street hustler, you know. And I'll kind of leave that one there. It's not easy wearing a kilt 5 years old.
I want to go back to, and this is all fascinating. It will all be in the book. And like we said, your Twitter account is r_Roddy_Piper if people want to get more information. And you will tell us when the book will be released, et cetera. But before we move on from Mr. T, I just want to ask about the WrestleMania 2 boxing fight. Because in the DVD that the WWE released for you, you said that was the worst match of your life. Is that still correct?
Yeah, it's right up there. Absolutely. It's the worst moment. Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we don't
have
to... Let
me tell you why?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess we can do that now. I guess we've all grown up enough. Mm. We understand that we enjoy the WWE universe for what it is. It's not to be judged too harshly. In that match with Mr. T, they didn't trust me. I had done some boxing, and McMahon had put me in a camp in Reno with Spinks, Tyro Biggs, Holyfield, and Braxton. And I had trained for 5 weeks in Reno getting ready for this fight. They had Lou Duva, one of the greatest trainers of all time, and George Benson. And when it came time in Nassau Coliseum, they said, make a fist. So I made a fist. And they taped my fists up. This is outside, just my fist. They taped my fist up solid. Then they put my fist in the glove. Huh. Wait a second. What are you doing? We don't trust you. You're going to take this guy out. So we start to have the match, and I'm thinking to myself, I can use my elbows, maybe. I can hit him hard through this padding, because he was scared. I think it was the third round. And you know what? At the end of the day, it's my fault. Let's make that clear. But this is what happened. Is those boxing gloves are also thumbless. Okay? So your fist is taped up. Then it's put in the glove, a thumbless glove. I'm a little less than halfway in the ring. And Mr. T is supposed to throw a left cross. And I wouldn't get in the ring and figure anything out with him. I just said maybe part of the problem, they thought I was going to take him out. And they had asked me for a little show business, and when he hits me with the left cross, that I go through the ropes onto the floor. Well, what wasn't realized by everybody, including myself, it came for the came to the moment, and all of a sudden I realized, not only are my fists taped up, the gloves are thumbless, I've got to get through those ropes. I can't grab the rope on the way down. How am I going to get out of here? And here comes the left. I just got to ball it out, go. And I went. And he missed with the left.
No.
Now, we got an old, old-timer saying, I'd rather you knock my teeth down my throat than hit me with a popcorn punch. Don't make me look bad like that, you piece of garbage. I'm feeding the family. And he was just all tired, and they had protected him to the nth degree. And what I should have done is, when they tried to tape my fist, I should have just, simple, no. And I should have just gone in there and took him out. But I was trying to be a businessman. You give your word, you know. Your word, your bond. Especially when you have guys like Orndorff, Orton, Morocco. These are heavy men that can hurt you anytime they want to. You give your word, your bond in our business. It was much stricter back then. So, yeah, I'm very disappointed in myself. I could have taken it out in 30 seconds, I believe, and I should have done it for the sake of everybody, man.
Well, very candid comments from Hot Rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper. Very happy to have you here on the program. And let's fast forward a year. WrestleMania 3, moving away from Mr. T, Rod. This was the first time you decided to retire from professional wrestling in a match against adorable Adrian Adonis. He got his head shaved for his efforts as well. Did you honestly think at the time, Rod, that this would be it?
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, it was that, you know, like, they say all kinds of things about Roddy Piper, but I don't think anybody calls him a fool. And it was a hard, calculated move that the professional wrestling industry wasn't ready to handle. And they hated the fact that I was going to make a movie, and the movie world hated the fact that a professional wrestler, the black cloud over him, is going to try to come in and be an artist. How dare him treat us with such disrespect? And the entire Carpenter, I've never said this one, the entire Carpenter-Piper relationship crumbled during that movie. And if we look at it, that movie was in 1988. In 1994 is when I had my right hip totally replaced. If I had done the calculations on my body by that time, and I got so much flack from the wrestling industry and so much from the Hollywood industry, both for different reasons, that I couldn't sustain my role. And my wife at that time, I had kids, and my most important job is being a dad. And so I had them down in L.A., and somebody watching the ranch, and moved them back up to the ranch in Oregon. And that stopped me being available in L.A., and I had to go back to professional wrestling. And so 6 years later, I got my hip replaced. Absolutely. I would have been on a roll if I could have got any kind of support at all. The movie was the number one box office the weekend it came out. It went against Dennis Quaid, All-American, and U2, Rattlin' Hum. And U2 put a concert. I remember Friday night, a concert closed down Hollywood Boulevard. I thought, we're dying. But wrestling fans, you can't beat them.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, and one of the things I remember about that movie, Roddy, is the fight scene you had with Keith David. And to this day, in my opinion, top three fight scenes I have ever seen in any movie.
Very kind. You know, it was in the Guinness Book of World Records. It's the longest fight scene in history, history, and it's been rated kind of like you said. That's very nice. Keith David, unbelievably wonderful man, a 220-pound dancer, hits like Larry Holmes, doesn't even know it. He's killing me. And the reason the energy stayed up in that fight was Carpenter was trying to do it as a director and this cut, that cut. And finally, Keith was hitting me so much, I said, listen, put the camera on. Keith, except for the face, just hit me as hard as you want to, and we're going to go as far as we can. And we got it done in three shots at it. And then came back in and did pickup shots. But with that fight, I'm proud of it from this aspect. That was a fight between two friends. And that's a much more difficult fight that had to fit the arc of the story. And where that comes out is Keith David is by a car, and it gets heated, and I take a 2x4 and swing it at his head and miss, and I break the windshield. But then I realize, this is my friend. What am I doing? But my friend Keith David got mad because I did that and broke a wine bottle to cut me, but it cut his own hand. And that made me laugh. That made Keith David angrier, and then he attacked me, and I think maybe we went over a car or something. So those moments you could only get from the education I got from professional wrestling. So I'm very proud of the business for giving. That business gave us that one.
One thing I'm going to go back to in WrestleMania 3, because you mentioned respect for the business and doing things the right way. You were on leaving wrestling for a little while to ply your trade in Hollywood, but at the same time, on your way out, what you did was you elevated another star in Brutus the Barber Beefcake on your way out. And for me, that spoke volumes for you helping someone else get over, basically on the grandest stage of them all.
Thank you. You know, this is part of my job right now. When we did the old school with Cena and that other kid, the English kid.
Wade Barrett. Yeah, the promo that you delivered where you said, don't you dare devalue the championship I never won.
Yeah, I meant it. I meant it because we know from this show, we're talking David Arquette, we're talking Hall of Fame and stuff like that. Don't you dare do that, man. And don't you let them allow them to let you. Don't play that card. Come on. It is real. Because if we don't do it correctly, it'll all fall apart. There's some kind of reality there to it. Right? Now, I'm not talking about the actual activity in the ring, what you want to think is real and not real. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the whole construction of the entity of the WWE universe. The nuts and bolts have got to be correct. You cannot adjust those. The belt must be respected, or it means nothing. It won't drop. When they ask me about the belt, because I never won it, and there's a couple reasons why, I think. But hindsight now, given 2020, I know that there was one meeting they had, and Chief J. Strongbow said, Piper doesn't need a belt to get over.
I would agree with that, Roddy. I don't think you needed a belt to get over. You were already so over that you would be helping the belt more than that belt would help you.
So it comes then to, you see, the old school thought people now kind of... And here's another one we'll clear up right now that, they didn't give Piper the belt. No, that's not true. I didn't take it. One, and I didn't need it. I'm proud of that.
I just want hard. Yeah. I just want to interject one thing here. I just want, like, a lot of people might be thinking of this not from a career legacy standpoint, because I think we can all agree that from a legacy standpoint, your legacy will stay the same whether you had won a championship or not, in my opinion. I think that you've cemented your legacy in wrestling. But I do want to talk about, and stop me if this is too personal, but from a monetary standpoint, would it have been different for you if you had been a champion or if you had a title run? Would it have made you richer than what you have made in the professional wrestling business already?
Great question. It would have done a couple things. One, it would have made me richer. Two, it would have made me change my wicked ways and go into business with the WWE, as opposed to being the ultimate rebel at all times, which I took too far because of my upbringing.
So I think there would have been more solidarity, and it would have increased my income absolutely, because they cut me off when I went to Do They Live. And Hogan sat down and they did No Holds Barred. That was the answer to They Live. We'll show him. Okay. But it was that personal, instead of going, hey, way to go, Rod. And then when you do They Live and it becomes a number one hit, geez, maybe we'll bring in like we will 25 years later and bring The Rock in. But no, they didn't think like that. So it, economically it cost me, but on the other side, that I got the opportunities to go places where nobody ever has gone before, because of being such a rebel. I've been able to take stands, meaning take, you know, stand my ground with way back with when a lot of our guys were passing away. I took a stand. I was the only one. I didn't take a stand to beat any promoter up. I just got tired of Christmas time. Not tired of it, but sad when wrestler X's son would call me and say, tell me about it. Tell me about you, my dad. That's all in that dark period where I almost gave up. Almost.
That must have been a very difficult. That must be a very difficult phone call to take any time when somebody whose father has passed away to call you and say, please give me some memories of my father during this, you know, holiday season where I'm thinking about him.
You know how many times a year I get that call? Holy, I'm the last one around. Flair went from Minneapolis right to Charlotte and roosted. And his daddy is a doctor. Was a doctor, God bless him. Hogan, I think his daddy was a doctor. Hogan went from something like Nashville to Minneapolis to Japan to New York. I must have been to 20 territories when they were back in the territory days. Nobody has been brought up in the carnival that's alive like I have. And so we're coming around to giving back and taking a stand and the pain. One of the things, don't quit. I don't have quit in me. I wish I did. I'd quit. I would. I'd quit everything. But I don't have that in me. It was, you don't go through that test back then. You know what it was like in 1971, walking into a dressing room, playing the bagpipes in a kilt, 15, 16 years old? You know what those guys looked like and how they hated me? They were all the end of the Gorgeous George era. And Gorgeous, that, you know, we know from history that whole thing got exposed. And so by the time I got in the business, like 69, 70, 71, it was a bunch of late 40, early 50, rough, tough guys that had been cheated out of their main event in life. And some kid in a skirt playing the bagpipes is going to come and take my spot? And I'm sure you must know the... And if you don't, I'll tell you this story quickly, how serious it was. What happened to me my first time in Madison Square Garden?
Is it the Larry Hennig 15-second special?
No.
Oh, no, this wasn't that?
No, when Vince McMahon Sr. wanted me when I was 19 to come to Madison Square Garden.
No, no, tell us, please.
You know what? And I never said anything for years, man. And I'll do you the short form. I'm in L.A. I've been selling out. Well, every wrestler says that. I've been selling out for 2 years. I've been going up to Frisco for Shires. I had things rocking into a territory that's been dead. So Mike LaBelle, who was good friends with Vince McMahon Sr., was, you know, they call every Monday and tell them, brag about their house and who was on top. And they said, hey, we want to see this kid. So I was scared to death, but Mike LaBelle comes down to me and he says, MSG, you know, MSG, that's all he said to me. Like, Chinese food, I don't know, MSG, what's it, Madison Square Garden, holy cow. So I got a ticket that they bought for me and they brought me to Madison Square Garden. When I walked in the garden, I was maybe 180 pounds. When I walked in the garden, first guy, Captain Lou Albano, comes to me and goes, "Hey, Paisano!" And he squeezes my cheek and he hugs me and he says, "We've been watching you." I was on a Spanish channel that was in the National, I think maybe 36 or something like that, 52. "We've been watching you. We don't want you here. You're too good." And he gave me a hug and, you know, that Italian kind of thing. Classy Freddie Blassie comes up with a cane and hits me with the cane. "You fence on that geek. We don't want you here. You're too good." I thought, what nice guys, man. You know, they make me feel welcome. So I blow the bagpipes up. They're a woodwind instrument. You've got to get them wet before you play them. But I had played them. I came fifth in the world. So I knew how to play the bagpipes. I put the bagpipes down, and I started doing push-ups because I was trying to look bigger. You know, there's Tony Atlas and Andre and et cetera. I get out to the ring, and I say to the announcer, tell him to shut up. I want to play the Scottish National Anthem and stand. Well, Madison Square Garden is 24,000 Puerto Ricans with knives, basically. You know, telling them to shut up for the Scottish National Anthem ain't going to work. But I didn't have a problem with it. I knew where I was going. Promoters had come from now Japan, Germany, and England with McMahon to see this boy wonder guy. And finally, they shut up out of boredom, 3-4 minutes, kind of like this story. And I put the bagpipes under my arm and went to play him, and nothing come out. And the promoters started looking at each other. And the people, and I, you know, I'm changing the spark plugs, checking the oil, whatever, nothing. Finally, I dropped him. It was like Jose Gonzalez, maybe. Somebody I was wrestling. And I did what I had to do. I went back to the dressing room, and they came to me and said, "Don't call us, we'll call you." I came in a limousine, and I went back to the airport in a cab. And
sounds like WrestleMania 1.
Of course, the AP of our business. Here's what happened. Finally, I'm so, my heart is so broken, and the public humiliation. And I'm in the cab, and all of a sudden it dawns on me, those doggone bagpipes, and what was wrong? And I grab them. When they said, Freddie Blassie said they didn't want me, they meant it. And Freddie Blassie, when I put my bagpipes down, stuffed 6 feet of toilet paper up where you do the fingering on the bagpipes called a chanter. 6 feet of toilet paper up there so they wouldn't work.
Wow. And
yeah,
all in an effort to have you not work in that territory.
Exactly. And that's the way all the old-timers were. They beat me up every day from the time I was 15 to about the time I was 20 till Judo Gene LaBelle got a hold of me. Systematically, 8 o'clock every night, I was the first match. And then they'd make me do all kinds of other things. But,
And how long did you have to pay these kind of dues? Like,
that's the best example. Can you imagine if you worked 10 years of your life on this radio show here, and you and your buddy, put your heart into it, and all of a sudden, you've got the Howard Stern show, and they shut your mic off. Just because.
Because he's Howard and he can do it.
Because you're too talented and they need job security. And that's the purest definition of ribbing on the square that I can give you.
But this, I mean, when I think of a rib that's happened to you, I mean, this is obviously a rib that with malicious intent. I mean, I can think of a rib that you've said in story-wise. WrestleMania 6 is a perfect example where Andre and Arnold Skoland dumped all of the formula to get the black part of your paint off of your skin. I mean, that's a rib, but that's a rib with, you know, that's a funny rib. That's like a, hey, let's get him, you know, after a match. But this sounds like a malicious rib. Like, this sounds like...
It's an act of violence disguised as a joke. There's no rib in it. There's no humor in it. They just for their own, so they can justify it to themselves and to the other boys that later on. And once it got out, it got a lot of heat. And after about a year, it turned in my favor because everybody said, that's the cruelest thing I've ever heard somebody do. Cruelest thing. That I've ever heard somebody do to somebody. And then I started kind of getting more accepted by the, at that time, the higher echelon. You know, so like when I guess at the beginning of this interview, you guys are good interviewers. You pulled this out of
me. No, thanks, Rod.
Yeah. You know, I'm just not going to sit back and be quiet anymore, because I'm coming to a point in my life where my children are, I got the best kids in the world, man. Unbelievable. I have a great relationship with them all. And my daughter told me this. She was in Vegas. And one guy was starting to talk to her. And somebody whispered to him, that's Roddy Piper's daughter. And the guy was in the pornography industry. And he started to apologize to my daughter. Nothing that was said that I know of, or doesn't matter. He started to apologize, and there was a guy named Ron Jeremy there. And Ron Jeremy says to my daughter, yeah, I know your dad. I don't know Ron Jeremy, and you know what? I don't want to. I'm not even remotely into. But those kinds of things for my family, like, no, I have some serious morals, because I won't stuff somebody's bagpipes. Not even to save my job, man. Won't do it. I know how much it hurts. Nor will I take a back step. And I think people have forgot that. I think like this, by the way, promotions, you know, shooting your mouth off to the point where you hurt my family like that. The Roddy Piper of old would have, whatever.
You know, I mean, on this show, I mean, we are in favor of the talent, of you guys who bust your ass day in and day out. And I have no problem. I mean, I don't know if you feel comfortable, but I have no problem bringing the names of these people to light. Every time we hear a story where a wrestler gets stiffed of their pay, or they don't get properly treated, or something was done wrong, we make sure to tell people the name. So if there's anybody listening that may want to work with this person in the future, or even give them a dollar, that they don't.
All right, let me take the stand then. I love it. I just out of respect for you and your show, and I didn't say anything to you. I was going to take the higher road. But this is the road that needs to be traveled, because sometimes the road that needs to be traveled is dangerous. That's why it needs to be traveled. And this Terry Allen fella, he seems to have a temper problem. And when you cast aspirations that you don't know what you're talking about, like the guy's legitimately in the hospital, baloney, da-da-da, what, you know what, I wasn't there for the language, so I can't tell you that part, that hurts his entire family and has that kind of fallback. I had some guy, there was a casino, his first name's Jerry, he's out of Florida, I don't remember his last name, or I'd say it, and he ran, listen to this, man, this is, last year, I believe, 2010, some casino, Mid-America, put out on the billboard, Rowdy Roddy's coming. And I saw the email that this guy sent to the people, and they said, this is what he said. He said that Roddy Piper has come, he's checked in the hotel, he's strung out on drugs and alcohol, and he won't come out of his room. And this guy went and got $10,000 was the down payment. And he comes, and he got the $10,000. He said, I gave him the money, and he won't give me the money back. He won't come out of his hotel room. He's a no-good, strung-out drug addict. And I saw an email that he had given to somebody else, and this casino. And there was, I had heard things like this. There was an elderly lady that had come dressed in a kilt with a lunchbox, and who was, you know, like crying, whatever. You know, she's elderly. And these people that... And so his take on it was, and I'm making up the number. I'm not sure what the number was. I will say 20, only 20 people asked for their money back, so they didn't want to see Piper that bad. And he's up in his hotel room. Now, guys.
Wow.
I can't imagine Roddy Piper being in the town and not coming of his hotel room. I knew nothing about it until after the fact. The guy's name is Jerry. He's out of Florida. I don't know his last name. It's really easy to look up. The casino was Mid-America. And who the hell do you think you're messing with? That was another event. I wasn't going to say it.
But at the same time, if there's people listening to this that, you know, get approached by these people to do business, then it's good for people to know what they're getting into, because, I mean, it's not fair that stuff like this happens to you. That's how you make your living. I mean, that's how you feed your family.
Yes,
and the lowest scum on the earth. Because not only that, they rip off our fans, man. And so you took that little elderly lady's money? You, underbelly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so everybody that's in our industry, careful. Careful of, I'm really careful of someone, I got a call from Scotland and saying, hey, we want to run a show here and we want you to come. I don't know who you are. Are you just somebody that's going to throw something in a garage? You got to do your homework, and this becomes, I think, the responsibility of when you become a Hall of Famer and the words legend and all these words. But I think you need, your job is to carry yourself in a certain fashion and conduct yourself in a way that others can learn. Like, don't have a dog in the room when doing a radio interview.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the dog seems to be excited you're on the radio.
You know, he's a good dog. Time to take a stand. I still think McMahon should just throw a Piper's Pit in WrestleMania. They advertise it the week before. They'd love it. Or put it on Raw.
What I love right now is, for me, it's like the Hot Rod has a pet, a dog that'll cut a promo on a dime and doesn't need a scripted one. That's fantastic.
My son's unbelievable that way. He can do the same thing. Whole family, if you go to rowdyroddypiper.com, I broke it all down for a while because I got tired of just the same trying to take advantage of people, I felt. And I started putting clips up of my family for a reason, because I don't want to be taking all your time, but let me kind of give you an example as we end this thing up here. Back in the day, and I hear a lot of stories about Roddy Piper, and some of them true, some of them I don't have a clue what you're talking about, and the others, whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
There were a group of guys, Morocco, Orndorff, Orton, Mr. Perfect, Bret Hart, Fuji. Well, Fuji could come and go in that group. And at the end of the night, every night, things got so wild and so crazy that we would pick a room, one of our rooms, and yes, it would be full of liquor and bathtub beer and whatever. But we would all go in this room and we would drink too much and do too many things. And we would philosophize wrestling and talk about it. But here was the thing. Nobody was allowed to leave the room. That's the way we stayed out of trouble, because we were all family men. And we had to figure, because if you know, I'm not going to tell you about Fresno. You're going to have to look it up. I'm not going to incriminate myself that much again. But there's some stuff that you guys can, you know. And we got to the point where, as odd as it sounds, well, just let's get a whole bunch of whiskey and go in a room, as irresponsible as that sounds, that was our way of taking care of our families. Because if somebody got a wild hair and tried to leave, we didn't let them.
And that was you guys stayed in the room, and that's often how the best stories are shared, and that's how the best ideas brew, really, right?
That, you know, we studied the business 24/7. We talked it, we figured out new ways, we came with new approaches, hours and hours and hours on end. As Jim Duggan tells, I love Jim Duggan. Oh, he tells a pretty funny story. It's just an interesting story. He says that, you know, I come down in the bar, and where's all the boys? Oh, they must have the girls and the beer up in the room. So he hunts down wherever the boys' rooms are, and he sees the door is a little bit open. He jumps in, and he's got a six-pack of beer. Here I am, and it's the new guys, and they're playing air guitar. For us, you know, I guess that's a step in the right direction. I'm not sure about that one.
Well, Rod, we were talking about hours and hours, and that wouldn't even do it justice to talk about your career, and we're going to have to bring you back onto this program. One more time, people can visit your website at www.rowdyroddypiper.com. They can follow you on Twitter at r_roddy_piper. Catch you on Rob Dyrdek's Fantasy Factory, catch you on Jimmy Kimmel, and catch you in Atlanta for WrestleMania. And give us the details one more time for your event in Atlanta.
Oh, come to the punchline. I think there's only going to be 300 or something like that. But it's going to sell out. We're going to have a ball. It's nothing like you've ever seen before. I'll give you my heart, and you'll give me yours, and we're going to have a blast. They're flying the piano in for me.